Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shops, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Lara Prendergast and I'm today joined by James Forsyth and Katie Balls. So James, the independent group's been alive and kicking for 24 hours. How are they faring so far?
I think they've had a relatively good start. They haven't kind of they haven't fallen over their shoelaces yet. I think also one of the things that you will see here is they've got a fairly positive set of media coverage this morning, and I think the polling evidence for them now, this is very, very early. I was talking to one pollster this morning who was kind of questioning whether you can really derive anything meaningful from any polls about them at the moment, but it's not a total flop, and I think that will help them. And I think the question now becomes, what is the thing that gives them momentum? The obvious thing is to recruit more MPs to this group, whether it be from the Labour Party or the Tory party. And I think they do need something to keep them going, because they're obviously not confident enough to go off and fight by-elections, which is one obvious way to get publicity. So they're not going to do that. So they do need something to keep them going. I think there is also another question, which is, what is their policy going to be about standing candidates in other contests? There are going to be some by-elections coming up. And, you know, are they going to run an MP? And if so, on what platform do they run?
Katie, are we likely to see any Tory MPs joining them?
Well, rumours abound that there are a couple who are thinking about it. That number varies. I think the two MPs that I think there is a consensus are the most likely to move are Sarah Wollaston and Heidi Allen, who are both Conservative MPs who have always been very independently minded. They're both very much pro-EU candidates. And then there's also talk of Anna Soubry. I think that Anna Soubry is seen as someone who, although she is very Remain, does have very strong ties to the Conservative Party. So it would be a very big move were she to decide to go there. And then there's also some talk of current ministers who are unnamed. I think it really depends how things play out. If this Conservative government decides to go head first for a no-deal Brexit, you might start to see more Tory MPs, even ministers, come out of the woodwork and say, well, we have an alternative, you need to change course. But I think for now, a lot of people are just waiting to see how everything plays out on Brexit before they make this jump. And also, if you speak to the Labour MPs who are involved in the, if you speak to the former Labour MPs who are now involved in the independent group, they do see this as a long journey. They don't think this is going to, you know, change tomorrow. They're not going to be a major electoral force in 2 weeks' time. So I think they do expect there to be a slow drip. So they think that you might get MPs from other parties. It might be in a few months' times, perhaps after Brexit, perhaps after Brexit has stopped. So it's something that could happen, but I think it's a long time. Timeline.
And James, I mean, in terms of the people they're hoping to attract, in terms of the kind of voters, is it just people who want to remain in the EU, or there are other people they're hoping to attract?
I think they feel that the kind of centre ground of politics, as they define it, is kind of unrepresented at the moment by the two main parties. And I mean, that probably does mean that they are probably appealing to people who voted Remain, people who sit somewhere on the political spectrum between Corbyn and May. I think the challenge for them is this, which is that, you know, the genius of Tony Blair was that phrase, tough on crime, tough on the causes of crime. I mean, actually summed up a huge amount of his appeal, which was it essentially took a binary debate that, you know, throughout the 80s, the left had said, you know, you can't blame criminals. I'm caricaturing. You can't blame criminals. It's the fault of their social circumstance. You know, society should take responsibility. While as the right said, absolutely nothing to do with anything to do with social circumstances. It's all to do with people's kind of deficiencies in their moral character. So therefore, you should lock them up for as long as possible. And there were these two positions. And Tony Blair came along and said, actually, it's a bit of both. And that was the genius of Blair, was that ability to offer an answer that appealed to the maximum number of people. The problem that this group have got is on the biggest, most contentious political issue of the day, Brexit. They are obviously appealing to kind of 48% of the electorate, not 100% of the electorate. And I think the kind of interesting question is whether they can move beyond kind of harming Jeremy Corbyn, if you see what I mean. I mean, there's a lot of pickup for their criticisms of Labour on anti-Semitism, Jeremy Corbyn on national security, his personal qualities and whether he's fit to be Prime Minister. Can they move beyond that to actually articulating a vision for what they want that either doesn't just sound like milquetoast, or it doesn't just sound like kind of reheated Blairism?
Katie, I suppose The independent group have at least given us 24 hours of not talking about Brexit directly. I mean, what has been going on with Brexit?
Yeah, Brexit's taken a bit of a back seat, at least yesterday and even today, because we're all talking about something which doesn't involve backstops. But it is ongoing, and we had Amber Rudd and along with a few of the other Remain-minded cabinet ministers, so David Gawk, David Mundell, all the Davids, heading to 10 Downing Street, where they held a meeting with Theresa May. And the message was one they have made before, basically saying that Number 10 shouldn't be using the prospect of no deal to negotiate. They should be trying to secure a sensible Brexit and taking no deal off the table. And this needs to be seen in the landscape of the fact we have another crunch, can we even call it? We have another crunch vote next week, once again on various amendments. And we are expecting to see the return of the Cooper Bowles Amendment, which tries to take, if you haven't been listening to this podcast for the past month, it tries to force the government to take no deal to the table, meaning that they would legislate. So if no deal looked likely, the government would have to try and secure an Article 50 extension. Now, I think that what the message with from these ministers and other Tory MPs who lean towards Remain is, we don't want to have to rebel and vote for this. You need to make clear, Prime Minister, that you are not going to take us to no deal, that you are going to seek an Article 50 extension. I think an Article 50 extension right now to be announced would be quite toxic. But there are some Brexiteers who do think an Article 50 extension is coming. You just can't say it in February because it needs to be nearer the time. So I think it's just, again, adding to this pressure, which is, what is Theresa May going to come back for next week? Because she said she's negotiating with Brussels. Brussels has said they're not reopening the withdrawal agreement. She said she is securing changes to the backstop. We expect that to fall short of the Malthouse compromise, which is what the Brexiteers want her to get. So she needs to deliver some progress to try and show that she is going to get a deal through. If she can't show that she has something which makes it likely she can command a majority in the House, all the Remain MPs are going to start to get very anxious about the fact that this deal is probably going to be voted down and the default is no deal. If they think that is going to happen, they might vote for this Cooper Bowles amendment.
I think one of the things that you see is, one of the ways Theresa May is going to try and head off both this rebellion from cabinet ministers and Cooper Bowles, is I think they're going to try and say, look, we really are making progress. I think that is why, that is the significance of Geoffrey Cox being in Brussels on Monday, going back there again on Wednesday, this delay to his speech that we were expecting today. I think they are trying to create a sense that they are actually making progress on getting something on the backstop. Because I think if Cooper Bowles came to a vote and we were in the current situation where we are in, where it doesn't look like that much is moving, then I think you have more people would be inclined to vote for it. I think if she can say, look, we're almost there, you know, we're haggling over how to dot the I's and cross the T's on these changes to the backstop, then I think she has more chance of getting kind of permission to carry on negotiating without this sword of Damocles hanging over her.
Yeah, and I was speaking to some of these potential rebels, so and those around these ministers who are rumoured to perhaps resign in order to go for Cooper Bowles. And I said, you know, is it likely that they would resign? They said, well, I think were they to do it, they would probably just go into the voting lobby, vote for this amendment, and then really just challenge the government, saying, if you want to fire me, you can. Well, I think the old decorum of basically handing in your resignation in order to rebel is beginning to disappear. Some of them think they can actually just rebel and probably stay put because discipline has broken down.
And just finally, James, Honda's decision to close its plant in Swindon, is that because of Brexit, do you think?
So the first thing to say is, I mean, be highly suspicious of monocausal explanations. If people say something is because of this one factor, it's probably not, right? Now, but I think you need to understand why Japanese firms were here originally in the UK. They were here originally in the UK as a kind of beachhead into the European market. Obviously, Brexit makes the UK a less perfect beachhead. That's one problem. The second problem is that the EU-Japan free trade agreement, which zero tariffs on cars, you know, makes it much easier for a car built in Japan to enter into the European market with far fewer obstacles, that actually has reduced the need for a beachhead at all. And it's very telling that yes, this plant in Swindon is closing, but it's not moving to somewhere else in Europe. The production is going back to Japan. I think the other thing on compounding this is that, you know, if the car industry was going gangbusters right now, they might well be prepared to keep these plants going because, you know, they needed the spare capacity. You've actually got the car industry in, as Ross Clark was writing on the cover of Spectator a few weeks back, you've got the car industry going through this profound change, creating real uncertainty, which has reduced demand for vehicles as everyone waits to see, you know, it's like kind of Betamax and VHS. People are waiting to see what is the thing to buy. And that therefore means that the car industry around the developed world is going through problems. And so all of these factors are coming together. So to say that this is due to Brexit is far too simplistic. But I mean, to deny that there is any Brexit factor at all would also be wrong. But it's also Brexit combined with this EU-Japan free trade agreement and how that changes the calculation for these Japanese companies.
Thank you, Katie and James. And we've got a special subscription offer this week. You can get 6 weeks of The Spectator for just £6, as well as a £10 Amazon voucher. If you want this, just go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. Thanks for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.